Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
And we'd like to welcome everybody back to the Footballers Family Podcast. It's been a little bit since we've been on, but hoping to get back into the groove of things. And today, I got a special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, Jeremy. My name is Steve Wright. Let's see, 65 years old, been retired from football for about 30 years, played in the NFL for 11 years, grew up in the Midwest, great loving family. Went from the Dallas Cowboys to the Colts, went with them in the middle of the night, moved from Baltimore to Indianapolis. I was all part of that, and then landed out here in Los Angeles and played another 7 years here, retired. Created the sideline misting business. And then we got a nonprofit called Global Giving we can get into. And wrote this book, Aggressively Human, just came out about two or three months ago, and it's doing really well. Had a lot of fun writing it. I've got a lot of great stories in it, talking about mentors and helped make me who I am. Not that it's a great thing or bad thing. It's just how one guy did it. It's not a you should book, but it's how to charge through doors when there's an opportunity. It's how I landed on Survivor. Opportunity, I land with the Dallas Cowboys as a free agent with 120 other guys, and three of us make it. And sounds a bit cliche, but work harder than you think you could ever imagine working, and good things turn out. Treating people well is kind of my thing. It comes back to you. I've got great stories in the book. I had one yesterday at a store. Treating people, everybody the same. It just comes back to you. So I don't know, kind of all over the board there, Jeremy, but
that's okay.
You left the door open.
No, that's what I want. If you'd send me the link, we'll put it in the show notes for your book.
Okay, right on.
Now, Let's just start out here before we go into where you are currently. Northern Iowa. How does a Northern Iowa and what's their mascot?
It's the Panther. The UNI Panthers. I'm going back to my first homecoming since I left there in 1981. First homecoming, I go back and I'm going to speak to the team. I'm actually speaking to the athletic director after our call today. But really looking forward to going back there, taking my book back, got a few book signings. I grew up in Minneapolis. All my relatives are from Iowa. And so we were always going back and forth, spent Christmases down in Des Moines, Iowa. Came time for college and University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls, Waterloo, came calling with a full scholarship. And the second domed stadium in the country behind Northern Arizona. And great business school. I studied marketing, got down there, and every home game was a family reunion. My grandparents, my dad's brother and his family. And so we'd have a big family right powwow on football weekends. And then just the Dallas Cowboys and a few other teams came calling and sending letters, and ended up signing with Dallas. And that's a fun story too. I relate a lot of things back, and I'll say it a lot, but I go into extensive stories in my book, Aggressively Human.
You said you were undrafted, which now when people hear undrafted, they think of, you know, I believe if I remember correctly, Tony Romo was undrafted. There've been a couple. Kurt Warner. Exactly. Yeah. Kurt Warner was undrafted and went through went through an interesting route to get to where he was and ultimately ended up taking the heart out of my Titans in that Super Bowl. Steve, I'm looking over here. You can't see it, but I have a Titans calendar, and on this month it has Derrick Henry, and yesterday was just too much for me. I couldn't handle that.
Yeah.
But you went to the Cowboys with, I don't know if it was the height, but it was starting to kind of go off of Tom Landry's influence. And my uncle is a huge Cowboys fan, and he's told me stories about Tom Landry. You know, I've heard Roger Staubach talk about him. Everybody talks about him in such a way where he is almost mythic. Of course, he was a human being, we know that, but he was almost mythic. What did you have? What type of relationship or what type of interactions did you have with him?
Nobody really had much. He was quite aloof, always in control. Coaches would kind of circle around him, and if he wanted to choose somebody out, the offensive line coach would come by him, and he would rag at my offensive line coach, and my coach would come over and give me an earful. He did carry a megaphone around with him, so if he needed to yell at somebody, he would just turn up the volume and talk to him. He was remarkably intelligent, very stoic, very religious. Different times, back then, we always had to wear a suit on the road, even if you were in the hotel and going out to get a bucket of ice at 10 o'clock at night before the game. You know, just down the hall, he wanted you in a coat and tie, always on the plane. It was real business. There was no crazy shenanigans. You know, then I ended up with the Los Angeles Raiders and all kinds of nutty stuff. But I feel so blessed that I was able to start my career with Tom Landry and the Dallas Cowboys. They were the America's team at the time. We were in two championship games. I was fortunate to be in both of those, in 1981 and 83, 81, 82. There was 120 free agents, and three of us made it. It was remarkable. I had Mike Ditka as my special teams coach, and he was also the tight end coach before he left to go up to Chicago. And for some reason, he took me under his wing. And so it was actually a guy named Jim Myers was my offensive line coach, and Mike Ditka. And Ditka just really took me under his wing. It was I call them wisdom walks. If he saw me struggling mentally, physically, emotionally, or something, he'd throw his arm around me and let's go for a walk, and he'd endow some great wisdom on me that just snapped my head back. And I've got a few examples of that in the book, but never really dealt a whole lot with Landry, except for when he was leaning over my chair in 1983, right before the fourth preseason game. I had just finished my breakfast. I was really looking forward to the fourth preseason game. And he said, "Steve, we just traded you today." "What? You did what?" I had just bought a house. I had just closed on it. I'd been living in there for about 3 weeks, and I had my girlfriend there, and all my buddies followed me down from Northern Iowa. And next thing I know, I was heading off to Baltimore. That was rough, but I learned quickly. It's a business, and you got to take care of yourself. And again, that goes into strikes. I walked two picket lines, and I came through. The second one in 1987, I came through the picket line as a scab for the last game in the morning. And then I knew the reason I stepped through, it's a long kind of story, but I'll tell you quickly. If you got time, should I do that? Should I tell you
You're
quick
good.
story?
You're good.
All right, so quick story. I walked the picket line. I just got into the Raiders in 1987. I'm walking the picket line with Howie and Marcus and all the boys, and everybody started disappearing after, 3 weeks or 4 weeks. I think it was like 3 weeks. And so I dumped my picket and I took off, went over to see my parents, and I got over there and three quick calls in a row, and I didn't realize I was negotiating the best contract of my life. But one of the Al LoCascio called and said, "Hey, the Al Davis wants you back here, and he's going to up your salary 25% and give you this and that." And I said, "Great, awesome. I just got over here for dinner. Let me call you in the morning." He said, "Steve, no, we got to talk now." I said, "No, I'm not going to talk now. I'll call you in the morning." Well, little did I know that they knew that the window was closing on this strike that year, and needed to get some veterans back there. And so then he called again, and then the third time was 100% guaranteed contract, which nobody had. And so I said, I'll be back there first thing in the morning for practice. And I was coming through the line, and there was still a few guys on the picket line and giving me dirty eyes and the middle finger and everything else. And that afternoon, everything broke in the NFL and everybody came in. So I was lucky, like usual in my life. That's a big theme in my book, just super fortunate that I could have had a crummy contract, or I got a 100% guaranteed contract coming back in. And so I don't know. That was kind of just roundabout long answer, but
No, that's what it's neat to hear the stories about that, because I want to say that was, you said that was in 87.
it was in 87. Yeah, you just had to really learn to take care of yourself. I'm team guy big time, but yeah, really got to take care of yourself. Yeah, 1987, Jeremy.
I remember that because if I remember correctly, Dan Fouts and what hat he was wearing during practice. I think that was during that same time, or what he might have been a little earlier. But with the NFL being a business league without guaranteed contracts, and with the salary cap, and salary cap wasn't a big thing at that time. That came around a little bit later on with free agency, or a stronger salary cap, if I remember correctly.
Right.
The contracts that people were talking about when I started really paying attention to the NFL, they were like $2 million a year. That's a lot of money compared to now. It's not. But it shows you how big the NFL has gotten. And you're right, you have to take care of yourself. And I don't, as much as I hate to see somebody like Derrick Henry leave, I get it. I understand that. But you said that you were part of the Baltimore Colts. And when I heard on the email that I received that you were part of the Colts, I'm like, that is actually pretty neat to see somebody who was there in Baltimore before they came to Indianapolis. And you said you left in the night, like the Mayflower moving company.
And it was absolute what I think is the most brilliant move ever by any owner. Baltimore hated us. They hated Robert Irsay. They hated the Colts. It was a 60 whatever 60 65,000 seat stadium, and we never had more than maybe 30% of it filled, and they're booing us and throwing stuff at us. Actually, my mom and dad came out. I got a story of that in the book too. My parents came out for a game and all dressed up. We're going to go out for dinner afterwards. And I met them out in the parking lot, and they were both just wet. And my mother's hair was all over the place from just getting a couple of beers thrown on her. And so the Colts and Robert Irsay just left in the middle of the night. He was losing money there in Baltimore. And so he goes to Indianapolis. And I think for the next 10 years, has got to pay $1 in rent for a packed house, standing room only, Indianapolis Colts. And so the money just started pouring in. Then he's picking up, Manning and everybody else and winning a Super Bowl. And it was a brilliant move. It threw us for, upside down, but it was great. And it was great to get out of Baltimore and be at a packed house and all kinds of opportunities for, whatever autograph sessions or speaking deals or it was beautiful. And then so I, yep, go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I just finished up my 4-year contract, and then the USFL came calling and came in with wheelbarrow fulls of money, and Colts weren't paying very much. And so I took off, went to the USFL, and that's how I landed in LA.
What's funny about what you're saying about the Colts, that people that it wasn't they hated that the Baltimore people hated the Colts. Everything that I hear, because I don't hear it from a player, is the exact opposite. They were mad that they left, and they hated Irsay. And when they got the Ravens, they're like, "Hey, we don't have the Colts back." And I've got it here somewhere. I've talked to several fans who were fans of the Baltimore Colts, and they said they'll never be fans of the Indianapolis Colts. But hearing it from you, Mr. Steve, is interesting, because you said the exact opposite.
Yeah, but, yeah, it's funny. you're always wearing a helmet, so no one can really see what you look like. I remember going out quite a few different times. I just do it for fun. I'm sitting at a bar having chicken wings and a beer or something like that, and leaning on the bar with three or four other guys that I don't know, and we're all kind of shooting the bull. And just for fun, I'd say, boy, how about those Colts? Just to see what they would say. Yeah, they suck or this or that. I'd even throw out, and they picked up that Steve Wright dude, that guy from the Cowboys. Is he any good? Nah, he sucks too, and blah, blah, blah. And I just kind of just, smile inside, but never found anybody really digging us in Baltimore.
Why do you think
It
that? Do
was
you
like,
think it?
I think it's once they lose it, it's all of a sudden, hey, wait a minute. We wanted that. We love the coach. Well, where were you?
What do you think that was because of Ursay, or do you think that's because of him wanting a new stadium or something to that effect?
Yeah, I would think that. And also too, we sucked. We just I forgot what our record was there in Baltimore, but it was maybe 3 wins or 4 wins at the most. We sucked. Ursay, yeah, I think he rubbed the city the wrong way, but
Well, I want to get to your USFL career, because that to me is fascinating. When I saw that, I said, wow, USFL. Do you think that, of course, we all know the story. People don't, people maybe not remember this or think about this. John Elway was not drafted by the Broncos. He's very similar to
the Baltimore Colts.
Baltimore Colts. He's very similar to Eli Manning, who was not drafted by the Giants. And the funny thing is, I believe the general manager for the Baltimore Colts was the same general manager for the New York Giants during that time. And I can't think of his name off the top of my
It
head.
begins with an I, doesn't it, or something? I can see his face, and I can't think.
He doesn't get the credit he deserves. And this is part of it that I cannot remember his name, but I've read the 83 draft is just amazing. Do you think, and it was because of your coach at that time, of course, it was because of his dad too, Elway's dad. Do you think that if Elway came to the Colts, that they would still be in Baltimore?
I don't know. It's a good question. I doubt it. I think those were probably already in the works because they've been building the stadium in Indianapolis for whatever, 3 or 4, and passing bonds and everything else. They were going to get a team in there, and I think they had their eyes set on Baltimore. Elway, John was he was he told the Colts that he was not coming to them. They had the first pick. He said, "I am not coming there, no matter what." And they drafted him anyway. And then so they had to make a trade with the Broncos, and the Broncos picked up oh my Lord.
Chris Hinton
Chris
was
Hinton, thank you. Thank you.
oh, here it is. Ernie Accorsi. I knew it.
Course, yeah,
Accorsi.
Ernie.
Yeah, if you ever get into a trivia contest and the question is who, of course, draft picks were traded too, but who was traded to the Broncos from the Colts?
Yeah.
Chris Hinton.
Chris Hinton, and he was such a stud. I got a greatest story about him in my book, how he took all the offensive linemen and a couple quarterbacks out to just, the nicest restaurant in Baltimore. And oh my God, we turned that place upside down. It was appalling. It was so much fun. It was a story of the ages for, great memories. And Chris and I have laughed a lot about that since. I ran the story by him just to get his approval.
Let's see. I don't want to keep you too much longer.
I'm good. I'm good.
I know
I'm good.
you've got things to do, and
Your call.
My daughter turned 16 today, and I don't have any hair as it is, and it's about to go because she just sent me a picture saying that she got her driver's license. It's like, oh golly.
Oh no.
When my son got it, our insurance shot up to about $200 more a month. I don't think it's going to be that bad, but she already wants a car. I'm like, you know what? You can get a car when dad gets a car. But USFL. To me, the USFL is one of those. Was it Perlman who wrote the book, A League for a Dollar or something like that? Fascinating story to that particular league. And again, Reggie White, Steve Young, Herschel Walker, several other
Reggie
players.
White.
What's that?
Reggie White.
Yeah, Reggie White. He went to the Memphis team, which is neat because he was a UT graduate, or he attended UT. Steve Young. Oh, Jim Kelly.
Yep.
Jim Kelly went because he didn't want to play at
Ron
Buffalo.
Mills.
And you know how he is today with Buffalo. Buffalo loves him, and he absolutely loves Buffalo. So things can redemption arc right there to me. You went, which team did you play for the USA?
Oakland Invaders.
Oakland Invaders.
Yes, and my head coach Charlie Sumner had been the defensive coordinator for the Raiders for the previous 8 or 10 years, and so I signed with the Oakland Invaders. Went out to Oakland, had just a riot with Charlie, the head coach, who was just a players guy, and just awesome team. And we were in the championship game. We lost it. The league folded, and Charlie went back down. You know, once a Raider, always a Raider. Came back down to Los Angeles and brought myself and Anthony Carter.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at the record here. This is incredible. 15, 5-1. That's a lot of football in a year. That's a lot of football in a year that you played. Did you have any major injuries?
Let's see. I blew up my shoulder really bad in Kansas City. Things were always going south in Kansas City.
I'm not touching that with a 10-foot
I
pole.
got another big brawl down there and got my mouth all messed up. I go into all the detail, and it's a pretty crazy story. But yeah, I tore up my left shoulder, and actually, I'm gonna have another surgery on that in November. The five anchors are still in there from 1990 when I tore it out. But that ended the season for me in 19, I think it was like 91 or something. Blew out an anterior cruciate in my left knee. Got knocked out once. Besides that, I was pretty fortunate. I wore knee braces the whole time. I had the sh first one to wear a shield over my eyes. Took all the precautions I could, and but it's
Did that
still.
you played offensive tackle? Did you get a lot of thumbs to the eyes? Because
Got a couple. I got a couple, and then I read about this as well. But my first year with the Dallas Cowboys preseason game, I'm running out to the field, and John Dutton, who was on the line with Ed Too Tall Jones and Randy White, and big John Dutton staggering off the field screaming, and he's kind of got his hand on his shield, on his mask, and trying to figure out what's going on. But he's running like he's drunk, and he takes his hands away. It's just I'm passing him, and his eyeball is out of the socket. It's on just the bone of his, and the ball's out of the socket. It's the craziest looking thing I've ever seen. And I thought, what the heck am I going into? This is a war. And Randy White was just losing it because he wanted to find out who did that to him. But in all his hand movements, he pushed his eye back in. He didn't lose his sight. He was fine. So then I got jabbed in the eye a little bit, not too bad. And everybody made fun of me for wearing this plastic shield over my eyes. 2 years later, our all-pro center, Don Mosbar, lost his eye. Got a fingernail, slashed his eye, and all the fluids went out, and he's blind in that eye, and it forced him into retirement.
You, Randy White, that dude was insanely good. When you went to Oakland, you followed your coach back to Oakland. That team,
L.A., Los Angeles.
excuse me, Los Angeles. Yes, you're right. Los Angeles at the time. They were Oakland Raiders, then they went to Los Angeles, then they went back to Oakland in 95. And then from there to Las Vegas. And it's funny about the Raiders. I think they moved as much, if not more, than teams like the Rams, who started in Cleveland, went to St. Louis, went to LA. No, Cleveland to S St. Louis and LA. And then the Cardinals, who went from where
Right.
they were. That's Chicago and
St.
all the way.
Louis, Arizona. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of movement, but Oakland. Al Davis could never be satisfied. And in a way, I understand that because it is a business. So you went to Los Angeles. You went there during the time Marcus Allen, you said Howie Long, Bo Jackson.
Block for all of Bo's runs,
Yeah. Bo Jackson, to me, growing up, Bo Jackson was. I grew up in Tennessee, so we didn't get a lot of the Raiders games here. We got mostly, if I remember correctly, we got the local team, which was Atlanta. During this time, not so great. Now, when Deion Sanders came in 89, that was a little different. But I would get we'd watch, ESPN or something to that effect, and I would see Bo Jackson run. I played on with him on the Tecmo Bowl Super Bowl. And what's funny is that if I look at that, you were probably on that.
I was on the very first Tecmo football, the very first one.
Oh my goodness. I remember that now. I remember you playing on that because they would have your name on that. I was like, who is this right?
Is that
I'm
right?
talking to him right now. That's
How funny. Yeah.
I
Just
played Tecmo
those
Bowl.
little pieces just buzzing along.
I played Tecmo Bowl so many times. That's really my
How
first
funny.
introduction to football. And I'm looking, you were at the bottom part of the screen because when you kick the field goal, your name pops up. Oh my goodness. Yeah,
How funny.
this is. I'm supposed to act professional, Mr. Steve. I'm not. I'm a fanboy first and foremost. This is
Sure.
awesome. This is awesome. I
How
can
fun.
say now that I talked to somebody who was in Tecmo Bowl.
The NFL. He was in Tecmo.
That's all that matters to me.
Yes.
You played in Los Angeles. Los Angeles was you played in the Rose, not the Rose Bowl. You played in Memorial,
Coliseum.
the Coliseum. Yes. You played in the Coliseum, which 100,000 seats. And that's where they play the Rose Bowl.
No, they played the Rose Bowl is
Pasadena.
a different
Okay,
facility.
Pasadena. That's where they had the Summer Olympics. I'm getting those two confused. That's a huge stadium. Did y'all fill that up?
Yeah, we filled it up a few times. I was kind of shocked. I think we played the Cleveland Browns and the place was packed.
Cleveland, huh?
It was a really finicky crowd out in Los Angeles. There's so many, it's a beautiful day and people are sailing and hiking and just doing outdoor things. So it was we would fill it maybe 60, 70%,
Still a lot of people for that stadium,
Yeah.
but you were against at this time, and this shows you I was a major baseball player or fan at the time. Oral Hershiser, Steve Sachs, those guys for the Dodgers, and I remember Showtime Lakers, and you were competing against that. So getting that type of fandom is incredibly neat.
Yeah, I just feel so fortunate throughout my whole career. Started my business. I created a business that, the big Misting fans, they cool the NFL. I brought that to all sports, Major League Baseball, the NFL. I have my computer just getting ready to go out here. And then later cool in the 96 Summer Olympics with it.
Well, I don't pay for Zoom. I have about just a couple minutes left before it tells me that we're done. Do me a favor here.
Yes.
Your book, where can they get it?
Aggressively Human. They can either. I also did the Audible, so everything is on Amazon. So Amazon, Aggressively Human, and then voila.
And he
Or
does not have
the
this picture has a, is that you on the cover?
Yes, it is.
No face mask or no shield on this one. So this was
Oh. That
before
was
the
old
shield.
school stuff. So they can do that, or they can go to my writeauthor.com, WRIGHT author.com. And in there, you'll have my Facebook and Instagram. And if you DM me, I'd love to personalize a book to you, and I'll mail it out of my place, and you'll have it in less than a week, or Amazon.
That's
Or Barnes and Noble, or I think there's like 30,000 other sites that our distributor Ingram sends it out to.
Can you give me and just a little bit of time here? Like I said, it's going to shut me off here in a minute, and I don't want to leave you hanging here. One word of wisdom that you learned from football that if my listeners here, our listeners here, could gather and just do something positive with it, what would it be?
Yeah, a couple things. My big thing is treat everybody alike. Treat everybody with compassion and empathy and love and friendship. And as cheesy as that sounds, that shit comes back to you. You're not looking, don't look for it to come back to you, but treat humans like humans. We're all alike. It happened to me yesterday. I was in a Barnes and Noble and a lady's walking up to the door. I just ran up there. I said, "Hey, let me catch that door for you." And I was just going in to sign three books. I opened the door and she went her way. I went mine, and she was probably a 70-year-old lady. She passed by me. There's, 50 people in the store. I'm signing my books to, put them back on the shelf. And she comes by, "What are you doing there?" I explained it to her and she bought a book, And here's a 70-year-old woman who she's not going to care about football or know anything about it. She doesn't. But just doing good things, it comes back to you. And my other big thing is, especially for younger people, is charge through doors. If a door opens up for you, someone offers you an opportunity, charge. Don't try to figure it out. Well, how am I going to do this? That's how I got on Survivor. The lead casting director asked me, "Hey, you want to try giving Survivor a shot?" I said, "Well, I've never seen the show." And I said, "Well, what's it about?" And she goes, "Oh, never mind. Do you want to try it?" "Yeah, let's give it a go." 3 months later, I'm landing in Nicaragua on, the number one reality show ever. But I could have gone home and said, "Let me think about it," and I would have never gotten a hold of her. So just if a door opens, charge. Big deal if you run into a brick wall. At least you gave it a shot. Try something else if a door opens up. But man, we're here for a short time. Take advantage and take advantage of other people helping you and help others.
Thank you. And I remember that Survivor. It's amazing. I get to talk to a guy who played football, played in the USFL, was on Survivor, and most importantly, was on Tecmo
There you go.
Thank you much for coming on today.
Jeremy, it's so much my pleasure, man. Best wishes, friend.
All right. Thank you. And thank you all for listening to Football's Family.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
The Pigskin Tales podcast is all about the lesser known pro football players. Yes, there are stories about the ones we know, like Brad Tarkenton and Harold Red Grange. But have you ever heard of Ernie Nevers? How about Dave Osborne or even Grady Alderman? These men created their own path to the NFL. How did they do it? Listen to the Pigskin Tales podcast, now streaming on your favorite music platform. Go to pigskintales.com.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.